Welcome everyone to the Farm CPA podcast presented by Top Producer. I am Paul Niefer, I'm your host. And today I am joined by Autumn Steinert from, I would say North Central Oklahoma. Do I have that accurate or not? I mean, it's due south of Wichita, but how would you describe where you're at in Oklahoma?
No, I think that's a good description. So we're about an hour north of Oklahoma City and about 30 minutes east of Enid. So right in North Central Oklahoma.
Yep. And I've been there many times. Matter of fact, I think I was there a few weeks ago. So it's a part of the country that definitely looks a little different than my neck of the woods. But it does grow some good crops and some good cattle and some good oil. I think you have some good oil in your area.
That is true. Energy is a big crop for Oklahoma these days.
Yeah. So, you know, instead of starting, typically when I do the podcast, I sort of start with the farm operation. But I know you grew up on a cattle ranch and so on, but then you didn't really come back to the farm. Well, I'm just going to let you, let's start with, you know, where you grew up and how you finally came to the current farm operation that you work on right now.
Okay. So my story probably is a little different. I did come back to the farm, but a different way and a different path. So I grew up in Colorado on a commercial cattle ranch. We grew commercial cows and high-quality grass hay. And then I went to college at Oklahoma State University and got a degree in engineering and a degree in business. And once I left college, I went to work for a construction equipment manufacturer. So I didn't come straight back to the farm, and I didn't really even go into ag at that point. So I worked as a dealer rep for a while in the Northwest U.S., in fact, in your part of the country. Spent a lot of time up in Seattle at the time. They had a lot of work going on. So I did that in market development, and then I transitioned into what was the bulk of my career there, doing acquisitions, including a joint venture in China. So I spent quite a bit of time going back and forth to Beijing. So I did acquisitions for a while and then transitioned into corporate management and corporate strategy.
Go ahead.
So I spent some time there, and then in 2018 was when I really had the opportunity. I left the manufacturing company and started working for our businesses here full-time, and that's an opportunity to work with my husband and his brother and his family on businesses that we own together, a variety of them, all farming-focused.
Right. Yeah, as you mentioned, you have the farm, but then you also have other businesses related to the farm. Let's go ahead and what might those type of businesses be?
Sure. So we have our main production farming operation where we grow mostly wheat, corn, soybeans, and we raise some cattle also. Then we also have an as-grow-to-calf dealership. We have a certified seed dealership through Westbred or Bayer. And then we have a Valley Center Pivot irrigation business where we sell and service center pivots.
Now, in your part of the country, what would be the mix of dry land versus irrigated land as far as for the growing crops, not necessarily for pasture, but for growing crops? Is the majority dry land? Is the majority irrigated? Or is it really just depend on the area?
I think it really depends on where you are. So in our immediate area, almost everything is dry land. And that's what we were up until 2013. We were only a dry land farm. You really have to find the niches of Oklahoma that have the water to support irrigation. So if you're in the right place, then you've got a great opportunity. Otherwise, most of the wheat that's grown in Oklahoma is dryland wheat.
And so you're not part of that Ogallala, and I always pronounce it wrong, but you're not part of that aquifer, or are you part of that aquifer, or is it a different aquifer that allows you to do the irrigation?
No, we're in a much different set of aquifers. So that's going to, your Ogallala aquifer will be in the Texas Panhandle and out in western Kansas. So we've got a different set to play with.
Well, that's okay. And now out in our area, we have, I'm trying to think, we have the Walla Walla aquifer. We have a couple other ones that's in the area I grew up in. And it sort of is, you know, the aquifers that you have in the Midwest are much larger than the aquifers we have out here because of all the basalt. You know, we're still a fairly recent, you know, when you talk geology, I mean, in some areas you can go down about 6 inches and you're going to hit a bunch of basalt rocks. So we're still a fairly recent type geology compared to maybe the Midwest. So Let's dive in a little bit more on the farm side. So you're growing primarily wheat, or what are the crops that you grow right now in your area?
So right now on our farm, we grow wheat, corn, and soybeans. And that's really been a transition over the history of our operation. If we looked back in the 80s, when my father-in-law first started what's probably our operation, then it was a wheat, cattle, and some custom application business. And that's what a lot of the operations in Oklahoma started out as, and some continue as, really wheat, and cattle.
And then you're now moved into corn, soybeans, and wheat. Now, is that a double crop soybean and wheat, or is it a single crop on the soybean side?
Could be either one. So we have some that are full season beans, and then we have a lot of double crop soybeans. That's been a great addition to our rotation.
You know, it's not funny, but my father, when he was still alive, and my dad was 47 when I was born, and I'm the oldest of three kids. So I, you know, my father did live to late 80s, almost 90. But I remember taking him to the Dakotas, because that's where he was born and raised. He was born in Selby, South Dakota, and then I have a bunch of relatives in eastern South Dakota, eastern or north or southeastern North Dakota around Aberdeen area. And I remember taking him back there to visit his relatives, and all you saw was wheat and maybe flax or wheat and sunflowers. Now, if you go to that area, which I probably go through there three or four times a year, it seems like, you see soybeans, you see corn. I'm not even sure if I see much wheat anymore. It's almost all soybeans and corn. So definitely what the crops were that we grew 30, 40 years ago is definitely different than the crops we grow now.
Yes, and here too, we've seen that same set of changes.
And so your father-in-law, did he start the farm operation, or was it inherited? Let's dig in a little bit to that history.
Well, if you look at where this family started, so there had always been family in the Steinerts or in the Bepleys on that side that had farmed in this area. But it really didn't transition into this operation. Our operation probably started fresh with Bill, who would be my husband's father, in the early 80s. And he really focused on wheat, cattle, and then where he could have some value-added operations. So he did custom chemical application, custom spraying. And he had also left the corporate field, actually. He had worked in the corporate side in some crop and chemical development and decided that wasn't what his fit was. So he came back to farm in the area where his family was. And we were that wheat and cattle operation probably all the way until the late 90s and early 2000s. And so as Bill and his wife, Rhonda, they came here to North Central Oklahoma, had four children, and two boys and two girls. And as Matt and Adam, the boys, were in high school and college, they really had the opportunity to expand the operation. And so that's where you really start to see some changes in how the business was structured. In 2004, it was probably our turning point year, as we've talked about it, that we had some big acre expansion. Until that point, we were really running a lot of stocker cattle. That's kind of what you did in Oklahoma. You had dual-purpose wheat, and so we ran a lot of cattle. In 2004, 2005, we're really, as we started to phase that out, and we went much harder into our crops. And those were also the years that we started to add corn and beans to our rotation. So we were operating at a new scale, and we were operating differently. And that's, I think, where you start to see the foundation of what our business strategy has become.
Now, you mentioned, just for our listeners out there that maybe more in the northern country or are not familiar, you mentioned dual-purpose wheat. And I have a pretty good idea. I know exactly what that is. But just for our audience out there, when you say dual-purpose wheat, what do you mean by that?
Sure. So a lot of so we sell a lot of certified seed wheat, and a lot of our customers are using it both to graze cattle, and then they'll pull the cattle off in the late winter, early spring, and then they'll finish growing that wheat and harvest it for grain. And so we talk about it as wheat that can both provide forage for cattle and then be harvested for grain.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, you know, just view wheat as a crop that you grow. They don't maybe understand that it actually is a grass. It's just a grass, and just like any other grass, you can graze it, and then if you let it rest and start taking off in the springtime, it'll grow a crop. So, and even out in my neck of the woods, I never really understood that until I came out to the to the Midwest or down to Texas, Oklahoma, and oh yeah, you're grazing on wheat. You know, that makes sense. So I actually learn something new all the time.
That's great.
Well, you sort of mentioned, I think, a little bit on the growth of the operation. Is there something you look back on that you think you did right? Is there something you maybe did wrong? And maybe you might even think about if you wish you had done over. I'm always curious on those type of situations on any farm operation.
It is interesting as we've reflected on it and we started to look at first, what did we do right? What enabled us to grow at these times? And some of it was being in the right place at the right time and being willing to take big steps that we were. We expanded sometimes in difficult market times, and so that left us well positioned when times were good.
Yep.
And we also found ways to really expand and leverage our skill sets and expertise. That we have a unique set of partners, I think, when we look at it. So the way that we've structured our business, we still have, we have a two-generation business today. So we still have Bill and Rhonda, so I consider them sort of Gen 1. And then we have four of us who are Gen 2, Matt and his brother Adam, and myself and Adam's wife. So we are all in the business, and we each have a different set of skill sets. And we've been able to look at how to grow the business and leverage that. So we have a real attention to detail and a real focus on efficiency, operation efficiency, and high quality. And we also tend to try to leverage and manage data. So we have looked for ways to expand that match that. And sometimes that has led us to either acres that weren't in our, they weren't next door to us, right? Sometimes we've made jumps into places that would cause a little bit more travel, or we've added irrigation, or we've added these other businesses where we could really leverage our expertise and our desire to help others and that others come to us for information. So we have, I think we have grown and scaled the business, but we have done it on more than just a pure acre question.
Right, right.
As we look back and we think about, so what, one, we tried to look at what led us to be able to do it, and we looked at the what did we do right, and what, because we've really taken some big leaps in the past decade or so. And I think we really have gotten a balance of action versus analysis. So we are numbers people, but we've got a, I think we're getting a good mix of, we run the numbers and at some point we have to pull the trigger.
Yeah.
Take action. And then we found a really great group of sounding boards. And I think that's been a big game changer for us, especially in the last 5 years. We've found mentors who have been there with their businesses, whether it was a farming business or not. We have some really good peers that we can reach out to that will give us great critical feedback. And we've got other contacts, whether it's our accountant that we're working with or our attorneys. But I think we're finding a group of people we can surround ourselves with that will provide good critical feedback, not just a yes man answer.
Yeah, and when I was listening to that, you mentioned a couple key thoughts that I came away from, and more than a couple, but the two that I wanted to just mention. You sort of discussed that, some people get what I call paralysis by analysis. You know, like you mentioned, hey, we're going to analyze this, but then we're going to pull the trigger. And a lot of times I think businesses, they'll analyze, and they get so caught up in all the what ifs that they just don't pull the trigger. Now, it may not work out, but if you've done a good job of analyzing it, understanding the risk, likely it would work out. And then another thing that you did mention that I think is important to understand is you mentioned that you expanded when times were maybe not the best, and then were able to take advantage of it when times were good. And I've mentioned when I do some of my speeches that I view you can make more money when times are bad than when times are good, because you do that necessary investment, then you're able to take advantage of it when it was good. But if you didn't make those necessary investments and when times are good, everybody else can do the same thing. So I think that was important what you brought up there.
I think it's been good for us, and it hasn't always been easy. Sometimes those decisions are the most difficult. And I think it has also not been one person in isolation. As I think back on it, part of our balance between action and analysis is the partner mix that we've got. So as I look at it, you know, if we were analyzing any other business, we would say, you know, we have a visionary in the group. He's the ideas man and comes up with ways to push us. And we've got the integrator in the group, the one who makes sure we're executing. And we've got the analyst. And it is the push and pull between those that I think lets us make some good decisions, because we can analyze the numbers and then one of us will push it off high center.
Yeah.
And I think when we, as I looked at it, you know, another thing we've done is we're trying to make value decisions, not just cost decisions. So as we're, and I think we try to be very disciplined about that. So even in these times, when times are tough and input costs are wild and going crazy every day, we're still trying to make the decision about what adds the most value, not just what can cut the most cost.
Right.
And so we've sort of developed some checklists as we're making decisions.
Good. And yeah, and when you're talking about value, I sort of equate that to the term I use at time is contribution margin. You know, it's that extra margin above and beyond the cost. Just because something is costly doesn't mean you shouldn't do it if the return is better than doing something that's cheaper. You know, so that's what you need to look at. So, well,
yes,
Autumn, we're going to go ahead and take a quick break for a sponsor message right now. Then we'll come back and we'll continue the conversation.
Get timely updates about taxation, accounting, succession planning, and other issues that are unique to farmers and agribusiness processors. Find out about major agribusiness events and how to comply with new laws that affect your business. Subscribe to Farm CPA at blogs.claconnect.com/agribusiness and experience the CLA promise. blogs.claconnect.com/agribusiness.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Farm CPA podcast presented by Top Producer. I'm Paul Niefer, your host. And we're going to rejoin the conversation with Autumn Steinert of North Central Oklahoma. Now, Autumn, we sort of talked about your farm operation, the history and so on, but I know that you do a very good job of what I call accrual accounting for, you know, as far as keeping track of your inventories, doing the costing and so on. Go through what program do you use? How do you use it to make more or better management decisions?
Sure. And I'll start by saying thank you. It is quite a compliment when the accountant says that you're doing a good job. So thank you very much for that. So we use a combination. We use QuickBooks just like a lot of people do. We use the accountant version just because it gives us some more flexibility in the number of companies we can have open at one time. But we're probably using QuickBooks in a more robust fashion than a lot of folks do. We manage data really in two places. All of our financial data and a lot of our inventory data is in QuickBooks. And then we have built some custom data management sheets and really some front-end apps. We have a lot of mobile users, so we have some custom apps that we use to manage a lot of our, let's say, grain inventory, fertilizer inventory, chemical, all that sort of thing. In QuickBooks, they're probably the things that are unique about it. So we are trying to do accrual accounting, not just cash-based accounting, even though our taxes are still cash-based. And really, we're trying to do that because we want to know the true profitability of a particular crop that was raised in a particular year. And we know that expenses for that crop could have been incurred up to several years before that crop was even planted, let alone harvested. And
yep.
You might sell that crop for several years after it's harvested. So we're just trying to use every tool that we can to get a real picture of how the operation is doing.
And I think a lot of farmers that use QuickBooks, they don't understand that you can actually do a pretty good job of keeping track of, like you say, the income and expenses per crop per year. So crop year, so 2021 wheat, you know, you might have gotten some of those crop inputs. You might have bought those. Okay, we're on the 2021 wheat year. So you might have bought some of those in 19. You might have bought some of those in 20. And you might have bought some of those in 2021. And then, like you say, you harvest it in 21, but you might sell part in 21, part in 22, and maybe even part in 23 and 24. But within QuickBooks, using class or item or what typically I see using classes, you're able to keep track of those items by crop year and by crop. Is that essentially what you're doing?
Yes, so we're using, when I think about the features that we're using most and probably most robustly, so we use classes heavily. So we collect expenses by crop and crop year. So for example, all expenses related to the 2021 corn crop get assigned the 2021 corn class. And same thing as we go into wheat, and we can look forward and back, right? Expenses could be assigned for future crops or past crops if we have something that comes in late. So we use classes a lot. We also use items. So our item list is a little longer than some others might have. So instead of just having corn, wheat, and soybeans, we have an item for each crop year. So we have 2021 corn, we have 2021 wheat, we'll have 2022 corn, so that we can see when we're making a sale, we try to be very clear as to which crop year we are selling so that we can go back and run what the revenue was and we can tie that back to expenses.
Okay.
Probably the other thing we do that's interesting is one of the reasons that I really like QuickBooks is that we can customize it to what we want. It has so much flexibility, and we can have a custom chart of accounts. So we collect expenses in asset accounts. Instead of making everything an expense, we collect it as an asset until that crop is harvested. And so that allows us to collect the expenses and then move them into inventory. So we've got an inventory value, and then the inventory can be expense through cost of goods sold as the item is actually sold.
Now, so sort of those direct costs, you know, seed, fertilizer, chemicals, those are pretty easy to assign to specific crops and years and so on. What about maybe like G&A, you know, salaries or some of those G&A costs? Do you do a cost center for that, or you do an allocation to those various crops? I'm just interested how you do that.
So we've looked at a lot of ways, and as I've looked at other software, you know, some allocates it right. You just set your allocation factor, and it does it automatically, and some group it in a bucket. So we keep it as a cost center, and then we do our allocations at the end. And part of that is because I want to see what that total, if there's something we can directly allocate. For example, if there's labor that we only hire for harvest of a particular crop, then that can be a direct input for that crop. Or let's say we have a custom harvester. So that can be directly allocated to a crop. But when we look at our bigger equipment expenses, or especially as we get into our overhead and our G&A, then my rule of thumb is if we would still have those expenses, regardless of whether we had that crop or that cow, then that really goes into the overhead pool that we can look at how we allocate later. Because I want to know what that total amount that we have to try to cover later is. And that's where we can look at then the contribution margins of each of our crops and how, when they pool them together, are we covering that total.
Yeah.
So we QuickBooks, we group them into those buckets. And then as we do our end of crop year analysis, especially, so we do two types of analysis. One is our calendar year tax analysis. In large part, is driven by our tax planning, but also by our cash flow forecasting. And then we do an end of crop year analysis. So when the last bushel is sold, we can go back and look at how did that crop actually perform? What was the actual revenue and the actual expenses and compared to our crop budgets? So when we look at that, that's when I do the allocations and I start looking at equipment costs can be allocated by acre covered. Overhead costs could be covered by, we can decide, is that an acre allocation or a bushel allocation? And we try to get to some pretty simple allocations that let us decide which crops were actually the most profitable.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's important. I think you've covered down to about the level you want to go. I mean, I see some people that then want to allocate to the field or allocate to the, you know, they really almost get too granular. I mean, I think we want to be we want to get it down to where it allows us to make informed decisions about, you know, what crop should we maybe do more of versus less of and so on. And I think to the level that you drop it down to, you can still make those decisions. So it sounds like to me that you're using that accounting system to actually be a management tool. Would that be an accurate statement?
Oh, certainly. I think that's one of our main management tools. We rely heavily both on, so we have a lot of tools that collect data and help us manage the inventory side, sort of just the nuts and bolts to make sure we have what we have. But our accounting system is really giving us the information to make better decisions.
Yeah.
Especially
yeah.
when I look at it, you know, our analysis by crop year really helps us check our crop budgets. And to us, the accuracy of the crop budgets are important because crop rotations are so important to us. And so deciding whether a particular farm will go to corn or soybeans or wheat the next year, part of that is an agronomic decision, but part of it is an economic decision that says when we roll all that up, do those acres of each crop on each farm with their expected yields, does that produce what we need it to?
Okay. No, I you know, because like I said, I think I said it earlier in our discussion, you know, I think, you know, some, and maybe I didn't say it, but some farmers view the accounting system, the doing the accounting records as sort of a necessary evil. But I think your team views it as really a management tool that allows us or allows you to make much better, much more informed decisions, like I say, on crop rotation or investment or whatever it might be.
Yeah. And we've really worked to make the numbers. That's one of the key things we're working on every year, I think. How do we make the numbers more accessible and how do we make them more meaningful? Because we could spend a lot of time tracking numbers that don't add any value. So
right.
We're always looking for the balance of what's the level of detail where it really helps us make a better decision or reinforce the decision that we already made.
Okay. And we sort of talked about, you know, a little bit on succession from, well, really you haven't, you've gone through some succession with Bill and Rhonda down to Matt and Autumn and then Adam and Melanie, right? Do I have it right?
Yeah.
I'm getting better.
You do.
But you're going to have what I call Gen 3 coming up. Now, Gen 3, some of them are older, some of them younger. Have you really started that succession planning process to get to Gen 3, or is it still a little bit too soon?
I think we're probably too early for us. I would say our kids are still young enough, so we have a couple that are in college and one that's just 6. So they are still in the young, and I call them still in the assessment phase, right? They
yep.
are still trying to figure out what they're interested in, and we are still trying to assess what are their interests, what are their skills, what are their future opportunities. But I would say in the back of all of our minds are thinking about we want to position the business so that if they want to come back and it's a good fit for them, that the business is able to support that. So we want to get to where, you know, it's at a good critical scale that would enable that transition so that each of us would have a fit and it could financially stand that. So
yeah.
I think that's a goal for us.
Yeah. And that's a good goal. And it's definitely an ongoing process. You know, it's not something, oh, we've made our decision. Now we're done. We don't have to think about it anymore. I mean, I think it's yeah. always going to be, you know, top of mind. You know, over the next, you know, 10, 20, 30 years, whatever it might be, it's going to be ever ongoing or evolving.
And I think, you know, some of the things we're thinking about is how do you teach them in the business? We've thought a lot about that, you know, what they will need to do and the thinking they will need to have to run the business if and when they come back will be different
yep.
than what we have right now, and certainly different than what we needed when we started in the business, because the business will be so different.
Yeah.
And
yep.
so we're looking at, we cannot try to teach them like we were taught, because they'll end up with skills that are behind the curve. So we need to make sure, you know, what kind of skills are we giving them? And, you know, sometimes we're trying to have the right discussion so that we've got to teach them that even though a lot of our time is around equipment, there is business beyond the tractors, right?
Yeah.
So we've got to keep engaging them in the business of farming, not just the activities of farming, so that they can see all of the opportunity and the types of decisions that we're making. So we're trying to be a little bit more intentional about having those discussions with and around them so that they can see the different facets of the business, not just the sometimes what they see in the field.
Yeah, because, you know, driving the combine or operating the combine or driving the tractor, that might be the most fun, but it's definitely not necessarily the most important. I mean, that you can almost get anybody to drive a tractor and a combine, but you can't necessarily get any person to run the farm.
Now, I'm sure some equipment operator was offended there, but yes, to some degree, and for them to think that, you know, a lot of our time, so we do spend a lot of our time in equipment, but we spend a lot of our time actually managing the business, whether that's buying inputs or thinking, you know, making purchases or making sales or making relationships, or dealing with customers. So there's a lot of a lot of parts of the business that they might not think about if they just saw their summer work.
Right, right. Of course, I'll have to admit that I almost didn't get married because right before we got married, my wife came out to ride the combine with me, and I tried to teach her how to operate and how to drive the combine. Let's just say that didn't go very well. So, and it was 99% my fault. So, but she still said, okay, I'll still marry you. So
I think the first part was you admitted it was your fault. So you were well on the path to a successful marriage.
Yeah, but maybe I didn't admit it was my fault then. Now I admit it my fault. So, you know, it took me a while. She got me trained finally. So now, you know, we're getting close to the end of the conversation here. I guess one question I would have for you, or there's a couple questions I always tend to end with. And the first question is, you know, what keeps you up at night, or what keeps your family up at night when you're thinking about your farm operation?
Well, there's probably a couple things. One, it's what are the things that we haven't thought of that could sneak up and get us? You know, we try to do a lot of scenario planning and a lot of analysis, but there's always something. And so we're thinking about have we provided enough? Have we done our risk management? Have we prepared for as much as we can? And then what do we do about the things that we can't prepare for, but risks that come for you know, changes in policy that we can't control. I think we have those things when we think about risks. And then we're always thinking, are we thinking big enough? Have we thought about the opportunities far enough? You know, have we gotten out of our box in what could disrupt us?
Yeah, that's good. That's things that we all should be thinking about. And then finally, I always end is, what is your definition of success in farming?
I thought about this one from two perspectives when I saw your question, and I think when I look at it and I think about what is success for our business, so not farming in general, but for our farm, I think it is the combination of we are in a business where each of us have jobs that are fulfilling and challenging. So they are not perfect every day, but they provide us intellectual challenge, and they provide us a chance to do something worthwhile that we are channeling our efforts. And they allow us, we are able to harness that all together into a business that's financially sustainable, that it's healthy and profitable, and then we can use that for the benefit of our owners, and we provide jobs for employees where they can have a fulfilling job, and then we are benefactors in our community, whether that's just because of our property tax dollars or the dollars we spend in local businesses or our children supporting the school. But I think if we do a good job in our business, then we feel fulfilled individually, and our business provides that opportunity for us and others.
Yeah, no, that's good thing to end on. I totally agree. So again, Autumn, thank you very much for taking this time to spend with us. We'll probably end up maybe 6 months, a year from now. I'll circle back and see how things maybe have changed a little bit.
Terrific, Paul. Thanks very much for the time and the time today.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. I'm Paul Niefer, and we'll be back next week with a new episode of the Farm CPA Podcast with Top Producer.